The Reverend Jesse Jackson was scheduled to demonstrate this morning in front of Amazon headquarters in downtown Seattle. Members of the Service Employees International Union were rallying there in a show of support for efforts to unionize Amazon security workers. Jackson and his Rainbow Push Coalition have challenged tech firms around the country to release data on their employee demographics. Amazon held out for months. Finally, in late October, Amazon did release statistics that show 15% of its workforce nationwide is African American. But there's a catch. Amazon's numbers include tens of thousands of lower-paid warehouse workers. Amazon declined to meet with Jackson during his Seattle visit. They declined to talk with us as well. I caught up with Jesse Jackson at the University of Washington yesterday afternoon, and he talked to me about his frustration with Amazon.
In Amazon, we've had the most difficult time getting communication. They have given us skewed information, and now they're having an issue with the union over hiring a securities firm that has a record so miserable in the treatment of workers. We think that Amazon is too great, too big, but too much potential to really be wasting time arguing about who represents fairly security workers. And we're going to be very insistent on these companies complying with some standards for gender and racial equality.
You focused on the companies, but you and I are sitting on the University of Washington campus, and one issue is access to the kind of training that you would need to get the really good paying jobs in the technology industry. Do you think that in our public school system at this point in time that kids of color are being sent on the path, the STEM path, that would actually get them access to university degrees?
For the most part, they're not. Our children can learn, will learn, must learn, and often rather than train our youth, they are bringing in H-1B workers to do the same jobs our kids can do and paying them less and having them in less secure status as not being Americans. So they manipulate the fears of those H-1B workers and rather than train our youth. And they're making enough profit. With enough money in offshore tax havens and surplus accumulation here to have a better training program for the youth in this country.
Do you think that companies like Amazon or Microsoft or Google or Hewlett-Packard are looking at, if they're looking at qualified pools of applicants, that they are making conscious decisions to go for white candidates, or are there not enough qualified applicants of color?
If they're not consciously diversified women and people of color as they ought to. For example, the 20 top companies have 189 board members, 36 white women, 3 African Americans, and 1 Latino. Our capacity is far greater than that. And the one argument they use is that it's about science and STEM capacity. On Facebook's board, the only engineer is Zuckerberg. They have a rather incestuous relationship with each other. And so we, in a sense, saying that since the metaphor for Ferguson is disparity, you know, hands up, don't discriminate against women and people of color. Hands up, be just, be fair, be inclusive. Another myth that they have perpetuated, they cannot find qualified people. If you go to a forest and don't find an apple tree, don't give up on apples. Get you some land and clear it out and plant apple seeds and get apple trees. So if they want X number of engineers over the next 5 years, there are schools that teach blacks engineering, Tennessee State and Hampton University and North Carolina A&T and Howard University and Florida A&M University. I mean, John Thompson, the chair of the board of Microsoft, comes out of Florida A&M University. So if you teach what you want. I mean, teach to your needs.
Satya Nadella of Microsoft made waves earlier this fall by telling women at a technology conference that they should wait for their managers to acknowledge them and give them raises. I think you could say something equal about men of color who are perhaps in those same roles.
He made a mistake. I hope he'll work diligently to overcome that error, and I think he has. The real point is that we did not know how good baseball could be until everybody could play. So you lock out more than half of the market. You're locking out money, market, talent, and growth. And so these companies, as we challenge them to open up these closed doors and pull down these walls, their best days may be ahead of them.
I'm speaking with Jesse Jackson. You are the founder of the Rainbow Push Coalition, and over the decades that you've been working, one tactic to help change things, not just putting people on boards, but has been the boycott. Is it feasible to boycott a technology company or an e-tailer like Amazon?
Well, we want these companies to stop boycotting us. One-way trade is like a boycott. They lock us off the boards, it's a boycott. They lock us out of C-suites, that's a boycott. They lock us out of meaningful vertical growth and employment, that's a boycott. We want two-way trade. We're not interested in fighting, we're interested in trading. But if they insist on one-way trade, there'll be no trade. Either two-way trade or no trade. That's a reasonable expectation.
One thing I've been thinking a lot this week, over the weekend I saw the play All the Way. I don't know if you saw that. It's about 1964, LBJ and MLK and the Voting Rights Act. But it got me to thinking about the many decades that you have watched this society kind of stutter forward, a step back. And I wonder, with the events of Ferguson and Nationwide, if we're at some kind of tipping point in America that is a horrible time, but yet where a door is ajar for something to change.
We're facing a huge backlash against progress, and the irony is it's being led by the biggest beneficiaries of our work. The New South, there's the New South. You couldn't have had the Carolina Panthers and the Atlanta Falcons behind the Cotton Curtain. You could not have had the Toyota, Honda, Kia, and Boeing in the South. So we made the South investment worthy. We pulled these curtains down. And they said they don't want federal monies. They want federal monies for highways, interstate highway. They want federal monies for new airports and seaports. They want federal money for research. They want federal money for military bases. And yet they reject federal monies for Medicaid. And of their state budgets, about 45% is federal. They couldn't make payroll without federal investment. So they manipulate people on some ancient Civil War notion. They're fighting Civil War rather than fighting for civil rights. And it's not fair to the poorest people.
Not talking about the South, but just talking about the climate in America, I had the chance this morning to sit down with Gerald Hankerson, who's the head of the local NAACP, and I was asking whether he senses that this is a time where we will see change moving forward, or...
There's a talk of war for the soul of America. There are the forces that want to go forward by hope, and those want to go backwards by fear. And those with hope and healing must outdistance those with hate and hurt. But if you drop your voting rod, if you drop your will, then you strengthen those on the other end of the tug of war. We cannot go back. When you think about the impact of the public accommodations bill and the right to vote and to go from the balcony in Memphis to the White House in 40 years, huge progress. And there's a reaction by those who do not want that kind of progress to take place. And when we vote at our best, we won two presidential elections. You won election and re-election. At our best, we win the big ball game. At our worst, we lose the big ball game. And I hope that we will make the choice. You know, going swimming from France to London to France is not that great a distance, maybe 30 miles. It's the undercurrent that makes it difficult. There is an undercurrent of hate. I mean, it's not, in some sense, what happened in the case of Michael Brown, the kind of perfect storm, you had this pattern of killing unarmed blacks. It's Rodney King being beaten, and the jurist sets the captive, the killer free. It's the beaters free. It's Emmett Till and Matt Gevers and the killers walked away free. It's Trayvon Martin. It's the Diallo in New York. It's Michael Brown. And at some point, the cup runneth over.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson, I spoke with him yesterday afternoon.